Hi, this is James Steele, and it's time to go to 11 on the Power Rock Podcast with Jim Madonna.
And we have a go for auto sequence start of all the vehicle's critical functions. 11, 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 8, start, 2, 1...
Jim Madonna here, your host of Power Rock Podcast, bringing you the best interviews from around the globe, from indie to mainstream, whether it be rock, hard rock, heavy metal, speed metal, contemporary, melodic rock, we got it all. You know, back in April of 2014, I started Power Rock Podcast simply because for the love of music. 2014 was a great year, but now that we've come into 2015, things are going to seriously heat up. I have several artists already lined up to rock the house, and today is no different because I have the amazing rocker, Mr. James Steele, on the line. James, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Jim. I'm really happy to be here, kind of honored, really.
Well, it's an honor and a privilege to have you call me from California to talk about your music. I've watched a video on it, and I got to tell you, absolutely impressive.
Well, it's my privilege, and thank you so much for the nice things you say there. I'm doing my best here, you know.
Well, that's all we can do, right?
Right, absolutely.
All right, well, you know what, James, now that I got you on the line, how about you go ahead and tell the listeners a little bit about yourself and, you know, how you got into the music scene and maybe kind of lead us up into today. Throughout this interview, we're going to be talking about some new stuff, some projects you're working on. So let's just, you know, I'm going to let you have the floor, man. Let's just have at it. Let's have a good time and enjoy.
Well, yeah, no, it sounds good. I mean, you know, cut me off anytime. I'm from San Diego, as you mentioned. Lived here for a long time, played in a lot of bands in this area, you know, from original music to covers for a while. You know, I was in a cover band called Pale Black for a while, and then I've kind of gone back to what I really love doing, which is original music. And, you know, I've been around for quite a time in the San Diego area, and this area has produced, like, a lot of fairly well-known, you know, musicians. Rat really originated here in San Diego. Jakey Lee, who played with Ozzy, was a San Diego guy. I'm blanking a little bit, but we've had a lot of talent come out of this town. In fact, I can remember one of the first gigs I did as a kid in a band. I was sandwiched between a band called Vengeance, where Jakey Lee was the guitar player, the headliner, and then a guy named Craig Goldie, who played with Jafria, played for us. And so like I said, Rat, Warren DeMartini, Steve Pearcy, all these guys, you know, had origins in San Diego. So I got to come up around that, and it's a great music city, and it's always been strong and staying strong. And now I'm kind of doing my own original project. I'm working with a drummer that I worked with when I was back in the day, playing in a band called American Steel. That was my original band. We were a three-piece, kind of very Rush-influenced, progressive kind of project where, you know, our bass player played Taurus pedals and keyboards as well, and we were heavily influenced by the band Rush and Zebra. And it was called American Steel, and it wasn't really named after me. It was Steel without the E. But today I'm working with the same drummer, at least for the live show. Now, when we did the recordings that you'll hear later, I'm playing with a good friend and talented musician and a film composer from Los Angeles named Jim Watson, who played drums and is mixing the CD that's coming out for me. But he's up in L.A., and he's got a lot of things going on, so he wasn't able to commit to the live band. So I'm working with a guy named Tracy Tripp, who's been my longtime friend and drummer from back in the American Steel days, and then working with the bass player, very talented guy who's a fixture here in San Diego named Mark Bach. And we're finishing up the CD, kind of working on our live show and get things rolling to roll it out pretty soon here. But I'm pretty excited about where we're headed. And again, very gratified that for the nice things you said about the music. I feel very positive about the kind of reception we're going to get when this project is ready and we're out playing.
Well, I know, just, you know, from what I had listened to, you're well on your way. You know, I can hear the, you know, you mentioned the band's Rat, things like that. I can hear that that 80s type of style. Actually, personally, I even hear a little Dokken in your music. Have you ever had anybody say that?
You know, I would take that as a huge compliment. I grew up with those bands, and a big time influence, of course, by, you know, Led Zeppelin, which might really predate some of that because they were, you know, came to rise earlier. But the 80s bands, AC/DC, the Scorpions, Judas Priest, you know, that Rainbow, Blackmore, Richie Blackmore, Deep Purple,
sure.
And those latter two bands go back a little bit further than that. But that's really, you know, where my roots lay. And so I take that as a compliment because I enjoy that music, and there's definitely that influence there. And you know, and the funny thing, I got a funny story too with the Dokken thing, because I'm a big fan of them. I actually once got to sing with George Lynch at a clinic they put on here in San Diego, and it was a painful memory because I was so paranoid about singing next to George Lynch for this thing that I practiced his songs in my rehearsal studio for like 5 days solid for like 4 hours a day, because they told us, you got to learn all of these songs, and we don't know which one George is going to want to play, and we're not going to like meet and rehearse first. So the day came, I pretty much lost my voice and couldn't sing, which was a nightmare, you know, to be playing with somebody who was like a hero of mine too, like George Lynch. And then, you know, not be able to, you know, sing as well as I would have liked to. But luckily, I was much older and more mature then. I was able to shrug that off, whereas I would have been completely devastated younger. But, you know, they're a big influence to me, and all those people that you mentioned, for sure. And I was big time, and still am, into Rush, although my music specifically is more, you know, straightforward than Rush. I love Rush, you know, one of my favorite bands of all time. But I'm a little bit more in the melodic, you know, hard rock metal vein, and you know, that's just where I like being. That's my space. I'm okay with that.
You said that you wanted to say something that you felt was a little funny, and you went into the George Lynch story. I want to share something with you that's funny. When I was listening to the tracks that we are going to play on this episode, my wife was home. Now, my wife is not a rocker. You know, she's the Mariah Carey, Carrie Underwood,
kind of,
you know, and I was in the studio, and I'm going through the tracks and I'm listening to them, and she knocks on my office and she says, "Who is that?" And I says, "That's James Steele. That's who I'm going to be interviewing." She pulled up a chair and she says, "I absolutely love this." And I says, I kind of looked at her and, you know, shocked. And I says, "Really?" She says, "He is amazing." I am not saying that because you're on the phone with me. I'm saying that because that is the truth coming straight from my heart, man.
Wow.
She's looking forward to listening to this interview, and so she can hear the songs again, because I won't let her hear them anymore.
Well, hello, Mrs. Madonna, and thank you.
Yeah, her name is Jennifer. Thank you.
Jennifer? Awesome. Well, that's great. You know, I honestly, when you were telling me this, I heard a similar, you know, story today, and really, I so appreciate it. And, you know, that's one of the best compliments ever, because, you know, one of the things that I've tried to do, and I don't think it's just a conscious effort on my part, because it's really the music I enjoy, but, you know, my music is, you know, you could call it heavy, but it's not, you know, it's not really metal, because metal has really, really morphed over the years to, you know, what was metal in the 80s is not metal today. There's a lot of screaming and shouting and aggression, and you know, it's a different kind of thing. And, you know, and I'm not trying to put that down. I'm just in a different space where my origins were from the old school metal, where, you know, it was like, we weren't angry at anything. It was kind of a jubilant, pump your fist in the air, right on. You know, it's like a happy thing. But more to your point, I really have strive to make, you know, my music kind of more accessible. I'll be the first one to admit it's kind of like more of a pop, you know, easier to listen to kind of metal, not as hardcore, and kind of what I like too. And when I get people tell me things like what you just did, I'm deeply touched and really appreciative. And it actually is one of the best things I love to hear, because it tells me that, you know, hey, I'm reaching, you know, more people, and the people that I want to, and the people that not necessarily aren't, you know, really locked in into this one type of, you know, rock. And to hear a story that I, you know, somebody who doesn't normally listen maybe to that genre, you know, that they hear something they like, and there's highest compliments and, you know, affirmations that my, you know, approach and what I'm trying to do as a songwriter is, you know, potentially, you know, I'm hitting the mark there. And that was really wonderful to hear. And please thank your wife, Jennifer, for me. I'm, you know, it's a huge compliment. I really appreciate that.
I certainly will. I will definitely do that. Something that came to my mind as you were talking, you were saying, you know, that you were comparing, you know, your style of, or your interpretation of metal compared to basically what you're doing. And you know what, James, I think that's what makes you unique, because you're showing originality. You're not mimicking another artist. You're simply being you. And I think that if all artists would do that, you know, the industry would change. But, you know, it seems like everybody, you know, wants to sing like this specific person, or, you know, play a guitar riff just like this person. Well, we've already heard that guitar riff. Let's hear something different.
Right. Well, you know, that's the challenge that you know, is difficult, you know, today, because, you know, I can tell you just in my own experience and the, you know, part of the world that I'm in, you know, and in my age group, you know, I'm not 20 years old, I'm not 30 years old, I'm not going to give away more of, you know, more of a hint, but, you know, I've been around for a while, and a lot of the musicians that are, you know, my peers and, you know, our same age group kind of thing, a lot of them now are all kind of doing tribute bands, you know, where you get up and you dress like somebody and you play their music, and I'm not trying to put that down, I get that, because it's a quick, you know, way to make money, and it's lucrative, and choosing to, you know, stick to your own personal muse, if you will, and play original music, and write your own original music, because, you know, for your own happiness and gratification. I mean, granted, I want other people to like it. I mean, if you don't, you're silly. If you're producing any kind of, do it for that kind of self-gratification and not care, but, you know, I do want people to appreciate it, which is why I appreciate, you know, what you told me about what your wife said, and so, but when you choose that path, you know, it is harder, it's not as financially rewarding up front, and sometimes that makes it difficult for me to bring aboard, you know, some musicians who want to, you know, want a payday starting tomorrow, but I wouldn't do it any other way, and I don't know how to do anything other than be, you know, sort of true to myself. I think a lot of times if you spot a trend and you're somebody who's trying to jump on the trend and mimic other bands that have established this new particular style, you know, you've already missed the wave. It's like surfing, you know. I grew up in Hawaii and never surfed, but one thing I know is when you see that wave coming, if you want to catch it, you got to start paddling before it gets to you. If you're in the midst of it, you're not going to catch that wave as hard as you paddle. So I haven't really concerned myself so much with, you know, what's hot, what is everybody doing. I believe there's two kinds of music, right? There's good music and there's bad music. There's people say I don't like classical. Well, there's good classical and there's bad classical. People say I don't like metal. Well, there's good metal, there's bad metal. So at the end of the day, if I write a song and I say, wow, you know, I think this is good, then that's what I'm striving for. I'm not necessarily trying to write this type of song or that type of song, you know?
Right on. Well, you know what? I also want to let the listeners know that you had emailed me a little snippet file of a new song that's coming out, And we are going to go ahead and play that at the end of this interview. I want the listeners to know that you've got to hang in there, listen to more of James and what he has to offer to get that information. All right, let's go ahead and let's get into some music, man. On this disc, you have a song. It's called Good Day to Die. How about some...
Right.
How about some brief information about that song?
Well, you know, that was... The origins, actually, of that song were in a riff that, you know, came from my band that I was in years ago, I told you about, called American Steel. And, you know, sometimes, you know, you can take some of these older tunes. In fact, Tracy and I have some plans because he was with me back in the American Steel days and we were in rehearsal and we tend to mess around. It's not always, you know, cut and dried work, and we'll just play and we'll, you know, bring up some old songs we used to do in American Steel. And so we decided, hey, you know, we can use that. I wrote that, you know, let's dust that off and fix it up. Now, that's not exactly what happened with Good Day to Die in terms of, you know, it wasn't a whole song, but it was sort of the riff on another song that where, you know, it worked maybe back then, it needed some rework to kind of, you know, make it more accessible today. And so that's how kind of Good Day to Die got started. And as far as the lyrics and concept, it's sort of just a fun song. You know, in terms of, it's not saying it's a good day to die, it's more of a warning kind of thing. And there's some imagery about motorcycles and whatever. And I think of a sort of a post-nuclear kind of sci-fi Mad Max kind of thing, and I'd like to shoot some kind of video based on that, but it's just kind of a fun, straightforward rocker with the sound of the, you know, motorcycle engine revving at the beginning and stuff like that, and we just have a good time playing it, you know?
That's awesome, man. I'll tell you what. Let's have the listeners hear Good Day to Die with James Steele on Power Rock Podcast.
A good day to die.
And we are back with James. You know, James, like I had said prior, and, you know, I have listened to these tracks, and great job. That's awesome, man.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
You know, I got another question for you. I heard that you do something with, you also do some Christmas postcards. You have this thing that you do. Would you mind telling the listeners about that?
I kind of really get into celebrating Christmas, and some years back I actually did a tune called A Christmas Jam, which is like an instrumental sort of thing. You know, it's hard rock kind of arrangement of a couple of, you know, very well-known, you know, Christmas themes. And I started this thing, and it's been 7 years now, where I thought, you know what, I appreciate the people, you know, that have been supporting me on social media, going back to MySpace, and I would like to send them, like, a Christmas card. You know, because of the, you know, costs involved, I couldn't do it for everybody, and I also couldn't afford to, like, you know, send a stamped, you know, card in an envelope kind of thing. I mean, an envelope and stamp and all that. So I got into doing the postcard things, and I would have people sign up on my, you know, website, and I would mail 1,000 of them every year. You know, they would go pretty quickly. This year was the quickest ever. So for the last 7 years, you know, the first 1,000 of my friends and fans on social media that sign up, I mailed them a Christmas postcard and sign it and personalize it. And this year was the first year that didn't just feature me on it. I have my drummer Tracy Tripp and bass player Mark Bach on there, and we also kind of spontaneously a tradition happened where somebody sent me, like, I think it was the first year, maybe afterwards, they sent me a photo, like, through Facebook, I think, and saying, hey, look, here's my card, thank you so much. And it was, you know, they set their card on this Christmas tree. I thought, well, that's awfully cool of them. So that sparked another tradition where I started asking people, hey, would you do that and send me a picture of my card, you know, either with you or with your pet or on your Christmas tree or something, you know, kind of Christmassy looking. It started snowballing. And this year, I think I set a record. I have about 570 some people took the time to send one back. And so out of 1,000 that I sent, you know, there's a 57% people have sent it back, and they're automatically included on next year's list. But it's just kind of a thing to show appreciation to the, you know, the fans and friends that have been so supportive, you know?
Right. You know, I was going to say, man, you know, I think that that's just awesome. You know, I have noticed with a lot of the artists today that scene, especially in the mainstream business, where using social media, there is not a lot of interaction with the fans. You know, they'll post stuff, you know, people just eat it up. There's no response. And people like yourself that take your time that is so precious and to thank your fans and show that appreciation, that says so much about your character, because without the fans, the reality is you are nothing.
I appreciate that. And I think, you know, it shows maybe, you know, it's about the character, but it's also about, you know, the fact that, well, it is appreciation and the fact that, you know, I get less done, believe me, because it does take time. But I think you make a good point that there's a lot of artists, you know, either musicians or engaged in some other type of art, that think, well, I'm just going to throw this social media, you know, have my page up there and, you know, ask people to, you know, like it or whatever, and everything. Everybody is going to think I'm so wonderful, and I'm going to say, please support me and whatever. But it's really a two-way street. And right. I go so far as, you know, I only post on the walls of people that have given me permission to do so. And I spend, you know, hours a day. You know, I send birthdays out, you know, greetings to people on their birthday. And because I really appreciate it. And you can't, being an artist that just goes up there and throws your page and starts plastering people's walls with self-promotional stuff and not, you know, engaging with people kind of makes you just a taker, you know, and a user. And what happens is, you know, people get wise to that. They can tell what you're about, and they unfriend you. They don't want to deal with you because they can tell what you're doing and don't want to be that way, because I really do appreciate, you know, the fans and their support. And so I know most of them, you know, by name. I mean, you know, because it's not that many in the scheme of things. I mean, I'm not, you know, Metallica, for goodness, so I can make an effort to engage with people as much as I can, and I will sometimes still get people saying, well, this isn't really you, is it? This is like somebody that's paid to do his pay. I go, no, it's me. I'm right here. In fact, one lady, and she's in, I think she's in Romania. She didn't believe me. She wrote me and said, oh, well, thank you so much. It's very nice that you like my music. I really appreciate it. She goes, well, how do I know this is you? And I happen to have my webcam available. And at the time, and I go, hang on. And I didn't go live with her, but I snapped a still photo of me holding up like a piece of paper, and I quickly took a marker and I said, hi, Monica, it's really me. And I took a picture of myself and I sent it back to her.
That is awesome, dude.
She was kind of amazed, you know, but now Monica and I are good friends, and she chats with me and go hi, and she's, you know, most people are very nice, too, because if I say, hey, you know what, I'm really busy right now, I can't talk, they understand, so it's cool, but, you know, I've done that, too, and that kind of tickled me that day, but, you know, that.
Well, I'll tell you what, let's go back to the album. There's a song called Flames of the Soul. How about some history on that, man?
Well, you know, that one, I've talked to my influences earlier, and one of them, a huge one for me, is the Scorpions. I mean, I think the Scorpions rate up there in the all-time great rock bands in history, really. I mean, with Zeppelin and Aerosmith and, you know, you name it. And Scorpions, you know, they belong right up there, and maybe because of the part of the world they're from or whatever, they may not get. So many people have heard their songs. That song, Flames of the Soul, the chorus especially just was kind of my nod to the Scorpions. As I wrote the song, I said, oh, that would be really cool to do this and stack those high vocals, and yeah, that feels like the Scorpions. Whereas, on the other hand, you know, the verses are a little more like Coverdale. You know, I can't help it. You know, I feel these influences that I grew up with, and I'm, you know, not ashamed to say sometimes I'm going to go, yeah, you know what, I'm going to totally go Scorpions on this, or, you know, go Coverdale on that, or whatever, because, you know, we are all, as artists, sort of a product of what we've absorbed, you know, over the years, and the artists that we ourselves admire. Out of our admiration for those artists, we tend to go, yeah, you know, I want to kind of do what Klaus Meine did here, or I want to do what this guy did, or I want to do my solo. I feel like it'd be cool if I threw in a little Mike Schenker vibe to this. And so, you know, that's what we do. And that song was really kind of, that's the origins of that for me anyway.
Well, here it is, Flames of the Soul with James Steele on Power Rock Podcast.
There's only one way to call the cops.
And we're back with James. Yeah, I can hear it, man. Great, great stuff, brother.
Thanks. We're actually, that's probably one of the next ones we're going to tackle in rehearsal, and it's going to be a little tough because in the there's a bridge in that song, and at the end, you can tell that, you know, I'm holding a very high note and then moving up as there's a really fast lead guitar run, and I'm, you know, in the studio, I played the guitar, you know, on a different pass than I did the vocals so I could be completely focused, but when we do it live, I'm going to have the fun task doing that fast guitar run up the neck while I'm, you know, way up there too on the vocals simultaneously, and we'll see how that works. I've gotten close a couple of times, you know, we're just messing around with it at this point, but I know I'll get it, and it's going to be fun, so thanks.
What do you enjoy to do when you're not doing music and you're kicking back at your home? What is your, do you have any special hobbies?
Well, you know, I find this lately, I spend a lot of time on it because, like you mentioned, you know, the social media thing. There are some days where I'll get up in the morning and I've got to really work on this where, you know, I'll go do it through my routine, I'll answer messages, and then, you know, I'll get pulled off in another direction. Or at this point, I'm still dealing with people who are like, did you get my, you know, Christmas postcard? Or, no, I didn't get my postcard. Could you send me another? Where is it? You know, that kind of thing. But, you know, when I'm not doing music right now, you know, I'm finishing up the CD, and we're also at the same time trying to work in, you know, a new band member and get the songs ready to play live that we're hoping to meet at the end, where the CD is done about the time we can have a release party and all that. So we're working on parallel tracks, kind of, with the studio recording still in progress while the live thing is going on. So I don't have a lot of free time. When I do, you know, I have a motorcycle, you know, that I like to go riding out in the country every so often. And, you know, I like to go to see shows for other local bands and stuff here in the San Diego area. Now I'm pretty much kind of focused on trying to get this whole thing, you know, done. And it will be a lot easier, you know, in about 3 or 4 months.
I like to ask this question. This is an opinion question. Being in the music industry, you know, we've talked several times about social media. What do you feel about the digital downloads? And do you feel that it has hurt the music industry or helped the industry? What is your personal opinion on that?
Well, you know, I guess you'd have to define, you know, what you mean by the industry, because I'll tell you this, as far as the songwriters and the artists, I have no doubt that it's hurt them. Underscore hurt. Capital H-U-R-T in bold print, underlined, you know, red ink, hurt, hurt, hurt. And it's interesting because I see articles about this. There was one that just came out where it was the drummer from Korn, and, you know, he was talking about this with, you know, in an interview, because Spotify is very popular now, and Spotify is a streaming service that pays very little to the artists and songwriters, and it has hurt. And you'll read in the comments sometimes these articles that, you know, people are going, oh, well, these musicians, they're spoiled brats. They should do it because they love it. You know, they should get over it, blah, blah, blah. And I think they don't understand just how much, you know, time and effort goes into it. I once had somebody say to me, you know, I remember people saying, well, what does a CD cost, $10 or $15? You know, then, you know, I can get a blank CD for like a dollar. And it's like, well, you don't get the point, right? What the value is in the intellectual property that has been created and placed on that CD. I'll be happy to send you a blank CD with my name on it for a dollar, you know, if you want. But if you want that, I had to pay lots of other people, you know, musicians, producers, you know, the guy who masters it for me. You know, an artist sinks a lot of upfront costs into that. And it seems like lately the idea is, well, you know, you make it up by touring or playing. And then musicians have been sort of turned into T-shirt salesmen. You know, got to set up the merch booth, sell my T-shirts to the next town. Really, really difficult. And I would be more concerned if I approached this from the idea that I absolutely must make money. But see, I'm kind of relieved from having to deal with that because I just do this, like we alluded to, because I love it. Hence, I play the music, write the music I want to do. And as far as the money stuff, you know, I don't worry about that. I have other ventures that I've been involved in. I'm professionally in the San Diego area in the video production field. You know, I have other endeavors going on. I run a website called Motu Nation.
Okay.
MotuNation.com, and it sounds like a weird name, but Motu, M-O-T-U, is a company that makes Digital Performer, which is a recording software I use, and I run a board for users of that, and I have some advertising there. And, you know, I do a number of different things, but I think it doesn't bode well for people trying to make a living in music. I think this is probably the worst time in history until they can figure out a way, you know, that we can turn the technology back to the advantage of the musicians and the artists.
Let me ask you this, James. Where do you see yourself in 5 years?
Oh, gosh, in 5 years, you know, I don't know. You know, it's like I would like to see myself in terms of professionally anyway, you know, hey, what can a human being want? You pay the bills, have a roof over your head, the basics, it's all good, and I have that now. And, you know, God willing, I have that in 5 years. And in terms of the music thing, I feel very, very optimistic about where I'm headed with the group of guys I'm playing with currently and the potential of the music. I get, you know, regularly get really positive feedback. So, you know, I don't know what the future holds. At the very least, I would love the opportunity to, you know, open and play with some of my heroes. You know, guys that I've looked up to over the years, you know, like Michael Schenker, who's also with, you know, Dean Guitars, which endorses me, and he was in the Scorpions many years ago, and Michael Schenker Group, and, you know, there's so many artists. So I would be kind of happy if I were just, you know, get this project going, doing some opening for national acts, you know, maybe doing some regional touring, that kind of thing, and see how the CD, you know, turns out. I mean, I use the term CD. It's more going digital downloads these days or whatever, but I do not know. I can't predict. I'm optimistic. I would love to be doing, you know, this, you know, more than I am now and seeing where it takes me, and I feel good about it. So we will see.
So what we're going to do, James, man, is, you know, I'm going to hit you up with a few more questions. We're going to play a couple more tunes. Let's go to the song It Goes to 11. There's some history with that. Why don't you let the listeners, or excuse me, why don't you give the listeners some history on that?
Oh, no, sure. You know, it's funny. It Goes to 11 is kind of a very well-known phrase amongst musicians and music fans, and all the genesis of it, origins are with the movie that was made many years ago called This Is Spinal Tap, about a fictitious heavy metal band called Spinal Tap. And the guitar player was a guy named, his character was Nigel Tufnell, which is played by Christopher Guest. And Nigel was very proud of the modification that he had to his, made to his Marshall amplifiers that was pretty much cosmetic only, in that they had changed the numbers on the front panel so that instead of when you turned a knob and 10 was the highest it could go, his went to 11. And he was convinced by virtue of the fact that 11 was higher than 10, that his Marshall was louder than anybody else's. And it was a great movie. It's kind of a cult film, and musicians I know, you know, all love that movie. And so that song was released on 11-11-11 as sort of a tribute to Nigel Tufnell. We shot it really, really quick. I got the idea. I kind of acted on it a little too late. But, you know, it was like written, recorded, mixed, video shot, you know, put on YouTube in the space of about 4 days, after which I kind of collapsed and was comatose for a day and a half. But it was a lot of fun, and we didn't have a lot large budget, and I didn't have a, you know, band at the time. I was still in my home studio writing all these songs, so, you know, I went down to a studio that a friend of mine had. You know, it was a green screen, actually, where they shoot things where they can superimpose right. Things that aren't there behind you. So we turned the lights all off. We put one light on. I said, let's shoot it black and white because it'll be look silly if I'm jumping around and prancing like an idiot in front of green. And we did the thing really quickly. And I'm really happy with it, though. And the song is sort of my tribute to Nigel. And one other footnote, too, is that the guitar solo in that video is not really like a real guitar solo. I mean, people used to say, well, gosh, that kind of sucked what he did in the middle. I said, you got to understand that that guitar solo was pretty much lifted straight. I sat in the movie and played that segment over and over again, and that guitar solo was lifted straight out of a scene with Nigel and what he actually played in the movie. So that's why it's kind of, you know, kind of thing going on there. But that's the background on that, I guess.
Well, I'll tell you, it's a great video, and it's a great tune. So here it is. It goes to 11 with James Steele on Power Rock Podcast.
Song is dedicated to the greatest rock guitar legend who ever lived, Nigel Tufnell.
Awesome. Like I said, prior to the song, you know, that's just that video, the black and white concept, that's what really originally captivated my attention, but that and the fact that when you in the beginning of that song, how you speak vocally, this goes out too. You know, that was really cool, man. So well done, man. Well done.
Well, thanks. That was sort of my, you know, making it absolutely clear what the song was about and that it was a tribute. And then there's a little section there where you can hear the static as I'm plugging the cord into the guitar.
Which yep.
is actually an homage. Some people remember there was a Canadian band called Max Webster, and they did that in a song called Check. And so that was kind of an homage to that. You know, and that was a fun video to do, for sure. And actually, I got to tell you, one other point of trivia for musicians is the verses are the melody from Rule Britannia. So, you know, because he was British, right? He was an English fictional character. So it's, you know, he loves his marshal, dun, 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 which is Rule Britannia, Britannia, rule the waves. So there's a little trivia that I don't think many people have picked up on.
James, in the beginning of the interview, or I should say the first 10 or 15 minutes of the interview, we talked about a little snippet that you had emailed me that I have not heard at this time. Tell me about that.
Well, if you decide to air it after hearing it, I'll tell you what it is. It's a little snippet of a new song that's in the works because people are going, well, is there new music coming? Oh, yeah, there is. I've got a computer with lots and lots of music on it that I'm still working on, finished it. Actually, it had a big issue this weekend, and so when I get off the phone with you, I'm going to go back to that computer and continue reinstalling apps and plugins and things like this and get it up to speed. But it's a little song with the working title is called Off Your Pedestal. Not off, I'm stuttering. It's called Off Your Pedestal. And that's the working title, and I sent you about 30 seconds of it because I don't want to, you know, divulge too much. And some of it is still in the works. It's still very much fluid, and I'm still pretty much working on the arrangement, the instrumentation, and whatever else. But it's just to let people know that, you know, I'm still cranking them out, you know.
Well, then, here it is, Off Your Pedestal, the snippet with James Steele, only on Power Rock Podcast.
There was a day, oh yes, it's true, I would have done anything for you, whatever it took. Just to make you mine. I should have known right from the start that this would end with a broken heart. I wish I could say it was worth the ride.
Very, very cool, my friend. I love that. That's great. And I appreciate the fact that you would give me the opportunity to play that on my show. I take that as a great honor.
Well, I'm honored to be there, and that's, you know, that's the debut, kind of. That's the first time anybody's heard that. It's a work in progress, and sometimes a little bit funny about letting them hear it, but people hear that before it's done, but I wanted to share that with you.
Well, I do appreciate it, and it means a lot. Last song I want to talk about, which is just an amazing song, as they all are. You know, I have a tendency to say amazing a lot because that's how I express myself. I'm they're amazing tunes.
I'll take that. I really appreciate that.
You know, if it sounds repetitive, well, it's because it's repetitive in a positive way, you know? So in that song that I'm referring to is Can It Be the Same? And there's a very special guest on that song. How about some history,
yeah,
brother?
Well, yeah, that would be Brad Gillis, who's the one of the guitar players that, you know, goes back to the early days, original guitar player in Night Ranger. And it's funny how I met him. I met him one year at the NAMM show. And he and I both record with the same recording software, which is something called Digital Performer. And we got to in a discussion quite by accident. I didn't recognize Brad at the time. I mean, I'd never met him in person. And so I'm chatting with this guy who's really cool, and we're talking about, oh, this, that, and the other. And he starts asking me some questions about his computer and, you know, being a performer. And I said, well, you know, yeah, you want to do this and that and the other. He says, hey, then he says to me, you know, would you mind giving me your phone number? And if I, you know, run into some issues or whatever, could I call you? And I said, well, yeah, sure. And so, you know, I give him my phone number and blah, blah, blah. And I go, oh, by the way, what's your name? And he says, oh, Brad. And I said, well, cool, I'm James. I look down at his name tag, which everybody has to wear, you know, a badge, you know, to get into the NAMM show. And it says Brad Gillis. And I'm like, oh, my God, I was just talking to the guitar player from Night Ranger for, like, you know, and I'm like, yeah, right, whatever, dude. And I guess it worked to my advantage because I wasn't all, like, you know, starstruck or, you know, acting weird or whatever because this was Brad Gillis I was talking to. And it turned out that, you know, he and I got to, you know, stay in touch and, you know, anything that came up, you know, with computer issues or whatever, he'd sometimes call me and say, hey, you know, I'm running into this issue, that. So I kind of became one of his resources because Brad is a very talented guy. Not only is he a guitar player, but he writes, like, music for TV and ESPN, you know, and people don't know this, but he can be out on tour with Night Ranger and he goes back to his hotel room and he's got his portable recording set up with his monitors and all this, and he's cranking out stuff for ESPN. So he's a very talented dude. And one day I was on the phone and I worked up the nerve and I just said, hey, Brad, listen, I'm doing this CD and whatever. I've got this song that I think would be just awesome. If you could, would you play a guitar solo on it for me? I mean, would you, you know? I was kind of scared, and he was like, yeah, sure, no problem. Just, you know, send me the file. I'll cut something in my studio and send it back to you. And, I mean, I was just thrilled, and I'm thrilled with what he did on this song. The intro solo is me, but the really ripping awesome thing in the middle, that's Brad Gillis, and my only trepidation is, you know, I can't bring out have Brad on the live show, so I'm going to learn to play his solo. So luckily he didn't bust out everything he's capable of on that because I don't know how I'd play it if he did. But he did a great job, and I'm really happy with how it turned out.
Well, it is a great song. And here it is, Can It Be the Same, with James Steele on Power Rock Podcast.
Try all your tears
James, thanks so much, man. I I'm going to use the word awesome. I already explained it, so there it is. I got to say, you know, it has been really a privilege, you know, you taking all this time to speak with me. You know, I look forward to your new material that's coming out. You know, I can't express enough to the listeners that, you know, or rather I'd like to say that, you know, I encourage the listeners to go out there and purchase what James Steele has to offer. I'm going to be providing on the upload, I will provide all the links that you have that'll take you anywhere. My purpose, James, really is to, you know, the gifts that you have, it's so hard in social media sometimes, like we've already discussed. And that's why I enjoy doing what I'm doing, because I can take something and help somebody out. And in turn, they're helping me out. But that's what it's all about. It's about sharing the love, man. And, you know, I just truly am touched that I'm able to call you friend. And, you know, and I thank you from the bottom of my heart.
Well, no, listen, I thank you, and I appreciate what, you know, all that you do for independent artists. And really, listen, that the honor is mine, and I know I tend to be kind of a little long-winded here. So, you know, thank you for you know, putting up with me and having me on. It's a real privilege for me. And again, thank your lovely wife, Jennifer, for, you know, being for the nice things she said about my music. And if I could say one last thing, too, I do want to send a big thank you to all my friends and fans on Facebook and social media that I've met. And I love you guys, and your support means everything, and your patience as I'm getting the project out there. And, you know, like you said yourself, Jim, you know, without the fans, an artist is nothing. They have nothing, you know, and I owe what I do have to those people that support me, and I'm grateful for them.
That's right. Well, there you have it, folks. An interview with James Steele. I'm Jim Madonna, Power Rock Podcast. Peace.